Welcome to the Stress Reduced Fat Loss Podcast, where we teach you, the health and fitness professional, how to holistically transform your client's body, health, and life. I'm your host, Ken Sylvan. And my goal of each episode is to not only bring my 25 years plus of experience in the holistic health and body transformation industry, but also those of my guests as well. Why? Well, to empower you and to expand your awareness of holistic transformations, as well teach you how to get deeper and better results with your clients. Sound good? Cool. Then let's get into the next episode. All right. Welcome to Stress Reduced Fat Loss Podcast. I'm your host, Ken Sylvan, and I have the man himself, Dr. Pran. How you doing?
Ken, thanks for having me on, mate. I'm doing really well. It's a beautiful sunny morning here in Sydney, Australia, and I'm doing well. Great to be with you.
Yeah, it's what, 9 a.m. over there, right?
It is, yeah.
And I appreciate you maneuvering everything, because I know we had like times. I'm like, oh, my math sucks. I'm, you know, doing it at 7 in the morning. Can you do 5 in the morning? He's like, Ken, I got a family. I'm doing stuff. What are you talking about? I'm busy. I'm working, you know, like.
It is a bit like that, but we finally got it together and we're here now. How good.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. So just for some of the listeners, I want to dive right into it because I'm excited to have you on here. Let's talk a little bit about, tell the viewers a little bit about yourself, you know, your background first, and then we're going to talk about how your philosophy, because you have a very cool philosophy. When I was looking at your page, I followed you, but I really like some of the things that you're saying and how you're saying it really resonated with me. So let's talk first about, yeah, what's your background? Let's talk about that.
Sure, Ken. Look, I'm a gastroenterologist by trade, which is essentially a subspecialty which focuses on diseases of the gut, fundamentally of the digestive tract of a human being. That in itself kind of is quite descriptive, isn't it? Because here is a doctor, and our focus is on disease. And that paradox was never lost on me, and it's always kind of stuck with me, even through medical school, that so much focus is on the actual illness itself rather than, well, how do you create health, which I guess is more in the realm of guys in your industry, which is the health creation, which is what I kind of gravitated towards. It's this concept of, if we're dealing with disease, then can we potentially aim for reversal so that we can fundamentally get a person or an individual who's suffering within an illness or within the depths of illness out of that into health. So that's kind of where my journey started, Ken. I've been a gastroenterologist for more than 10 years, a doctor for more than 20, and it's just been a slow kind of evolution of my philosophy as the time's gone on. And I've been very, very lucky that I've been able to kind of gather a bit of a following of people who are kind of interested in the same things that I am. It's just been a slow process of growth, really. So to answer your question in terms of what my background is, that's kind of my background. I think, you know, sometimes you've got to hit the depths of or a really low point in your life as well in terms of your own personal health, which I think happened to me in my mid-30s. I also witnessed loved ones go through disease. So I think that kind of gave me a bit of motivation to start looking outside the traditional sphere of medicine, of what we're taught in our universities, in our medical schools, and the paradigms of being taught illness management by as junior doctors. And it's been a great period of growth for me, and I continue to keep growing.
Yeah, and I think that's part of where a lot of our zone of genius is. Our zone of genius usually comes from a place of either suffering or pain a little bit. We all have, not all of us, most of us have either a loved one or ourselves went through challenges, and that helped us dive in and become more expert on something and find out more about it, find our truth in it, right? So I'm not happy to hear that you went through things, but I'm not surprised as well that you went through some stuff, and that kind of helped catapult you, I guess, probably even deeper into where you're going anyway, which is, you know, which makes us great, right? So then for you, you also have a lot of great mindsets when it comes to, you know, how our world is going. You know, you talked about, you know, disease being something that suffers for a lot of us, keeps us in business, you know, in a certain way. So was there a time which shifted your mindset and made you start, you know, thinking about things in a different way and just saying, you know, like, geez, like, yeah, we're kind of like, there's a part of our world that's feeding off of us being sick. So is there some point in life which helped you go, wow, I think that's happening? Or what was that kind of that changing point for you, or that light bulb, or whatever you want to call it? So.
Absolutely, Ken. I think the realization for me came when you study evolution in depth. You realize, like most living systems, of which we're a type of a living system, we're an animal too. When you take an animal out of its environment that it has adapted to, you fundamentally give it a state of disease. It's like animals in a zoo require veterinarians because they get ill. They're out of their own environment. And I think a philosophical dawning for me was that, yes, we built civilization, you know, cities and towers and great architecture and so forth, but it essentially became a zoo of our own making, if that makes sense. And the pharmaceutical medical industrial complex that exists now can only exist because of this is that our environment around us changed drastically. Now, I'm not trying to romanticize the hunter-gatherer way of life, which is what we all are. We're all hunter-gatherers, yeah, fundamentally deep down, and have been so for many millions of years as pre-humans, and then in the last 300,000 years as modern humans, that's what we are. Yet I'm not trying to romanticize it, because it's a very difficult life. You know, a hunter-gatherer's life has its own challenges, but certainly most modern illnesses could be termed Neolithic disease. It is civilization, diseases of modern civilization, of the rise of the Industrial Revolution, which reduced the requirement on our need for physical work, obviously, in the last couple of hundred years. And now we stand on the precipice of the technological revolution, you know, the artificial intelligence age dawns. And one has to wonder what that'll do to our brain. If the Industrial Revolution reduced our reliance on our musculoskeletal system, the technological revolution will reduce our reliance on the brain. So we stand on a very scary precipice. And I think we've got to respect the people that are trying to bring awareness to the masses about this. And there's a great John Steinbeck quote that comes to mind, where he said, "Progress often resembles destruction." And this is where we stand. We lurch towards progress, but sadly, a lot of what remains to be human also gets destroyed in the within that trajectory of progress.
I love that. You know, I was just listening. I'm like, wow, that was, you know what? I couldn't have said anything better. That was so well said on that line based. You know, we're always walking that line of things, right? So, and one of the things, actually looking at your page and looking at all the different things you talked about, I remember when I was going to reach out to you, I'm like, man, this guy's got so many great things to say and to talk about. What I want to listen to him talk about today. And, you know, with a lot of our students who are, like I said, nutritionists, strength coach, trainers, sometimes naturopaths, sometimes doctors, they're coming and saying, okay, well, how do I do better holistic transformation with clients? How do I get their gut better, get them to sleep better, get their insulin, you know, their cortisol, their growth hormone at a better place? Because if I can do and work with those big three hormones, a lot of the issues, estrogen, testosterone, we can mitigate those. If we can work on those big three, you know, and so on from there. But a lot of times what we're missing is the quality of food.
Yes.
The quality of food is sitting here over there like a, almost like, hello, I'm over here. And one of the things I saw on your page was talking about farming and talking about meat. And that's a huge topic right now. You know, people wanting us to, in some respects, eat cardboard pretty much, you know, and eat fake meat sources and everything else. So I want to talk today a little bit about why is wild meat so much better for us than obviously factory farmed. And obviously, even like, you know, like I said, having our fake meat sources. Let's talk about that, because I know you had some great things to say when I looked at your Instagram page there. So let's talk about first why you think that is and why, so some students and people can listen and hear that. So.
Sure. It's, to me, I just like to simplify it, Ken. Like, as I said earlier, an organism or a system, a biological system or a species is best suited to the environment that they're adapted for. So when you're talking about wild meats or wild fish, Any wild creature, you're fundamentally talking about it outside the zoo, right? Basically, they're existing in this environment. Often these animals that we eat as human beings, which are more sort of herbivores than they are carnivores, or humans tend to gravitate towards herbivorous animals for meat, not only because of taste, but because of nutrition. But a lot of these herbivores, whether it be elk, deer, wild goat, whatever, when they're in the wild, they're experiencing food sources which are very, very varied. Okay, so it is what you call phyto variation. So they're consuming plants in all their different states, grown within soil that's not plagued with fertilizer, which destroys the microbiome within the soil. So they're existing in an environment untouched by human hands, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So a lot of their meat takes on that quality. There's often reduced saturated fat within animals that are wild. I'm not saying saturated fat is bad per se, but in someone who's metabolically broken, potentially adding in more saturated fat doesn't really do them any more favors. I think we can talk about whether if you wanted to replace fat energy versus carbohydrate energy to improve metabolic health, we can talk about that later. But generally speaking, or broadly speaking, most wild meats are reduced in saturated fat. The omega fat profile is often better. You get a higher quantity of omega-3 versus the omega-6, which are more the pro-inflammatory type of omegas. Obviously, you have more mineral density within these animals as well. I think they're often richer in iron and various other minerals because they're just consuming food grown in soils that are richer in this stuff. Whereas when you talk about animals that are farmed, especially those that are factory farmed, that are fed in feedlots in diets rich in grain, the grain often is quite energy dense or calorically dense. Mm-hmm. However, reduced in a nutrient profile. The nutrients can be amino acids, it can be minerals, it can be vitamins. It's all of those things, really. So the animal ends up with more energy density, but a reduction in their nutrients. And the classic example is your heavily marbled meat, you know, the Wagyu meat, which we as human beings seem to pay a lot of money for and gravitate towards because it is palatable. It is extremely palatable due to the fat content of it. But when you study the fat profile of these animals, the saturated fat content is huge. The protein within these meats are often lower because there's much more fat within it than muscle. Mm-hmm. You'll find that the omega profile's off. Additionally, things like vitamin A, iron, so forth, and many minerals and vitamins tend to be reduced in these animals. So in my view, it is no doubt that consuming animals in their own environment, i.e. wild, is going to be much better for you. Now, how do you best replicate that? Because that might not always be practical, right, to go out and hunt your own meat or find wild meat. That's not practical. So how do you replicate that within the constraints of modern society? My belief is that animals that are grass-fed, grass-finished without too much grain. I mean, it doesn't matter if they have a few days of grain to finish them, just to add a little bit of fat to them or a bit more taste to them. But gravitating away from the animals that are, say, 400 days grain fed, and distinguishing them from animals that are maybe 30 day grain finished, or even indeed grass fed, grass finished, it's just healthier for us. It's a healthier meat. The animal's healthier.
Do you think that's also because, like, a lot of times if animals are eating what they, I guess, historically or genetically should be eating, do you think that's better for them as well? Like, if you know, a cow eating grass is probably better than, or...
Absolutely, absolutely. Historically speaking, grain intake in these domesticated cows would have been very, very low. Grain is seen in nature without human hands farming it, and the cows consume a little bit of it, but not a huge amount. So with a lot of these feedlot cattle, when you overfeed them grain, and this is a well-recognized phenomenon, Ken, I don't know if you're aware of it, they get a disease called grain overload, where their rumens or their stomachs blow up full of GATs because of brain-based toxicity to them, and they get something called lactic acidosis and can actually die. The way the farmers get around that when their animals get grain overload is fundamentally puncture their stomach externally to release all the GATs. Any animal fed grain at high levels will develop this. This can be cows, this can be goats, this can be horses, sheep. This is a concept known as grain overload, well known in the farming industry, well known if you're a veterinarian. But the interesting thing is we never talk about grain overload in humans, right? Like that should be a concept that we talk about. I think as human beings, we've kind of come to become quite reliant on grain with the rise of the agrarian revolution 10,000 years ago. Yeah. But lately our reliance on grains really huge. I mean, take a place like America, for example. I probably estimate 75 to 80% of your calories will come from grain.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I just feel this is, especially processed grain, right? Like we're talking flour, ground down grain. I just think it's just far too much for a human being. But the interesting concept is the same phenomena occurs in animals, grain overload. I'd urge all your viewers, all your students to potentially start exploring that just to read up a little bit on it.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. You know what? I've heard of the digestive issues, but I've never heard of that specifically. So that's definitely something I know I'm going to dive and take a peek more into. I didn't know how they got rid of it. I know they were getting sick from it, but I didn't know as much about that. Right. So that's fascinating. Even with chickens too, I have some friends and colleagues and fellow coworkers that, you know, they have their own pasture raised chickens and they're running around, they're pecking, they're doing whatever, they're eating whatever's in the grass, the bugs, whatever. And it's interesting, even when you see the chickens, when I see them, they're very different. You know, like I said, they're as opposed to just sitting in their feces, you know, like eating a corn based whatever, when the chicken even tastes different.
Yeah, absolutely. Without question. I think over the last probably 80 years or so, we've selected for chickens that are genetically modified, obviously, whether it's through whether it's done in a lab versus just the process of selective breeding. We've selected for chickens that are bigger, no doubt. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, you're fundamentally selecting for something that has more protein source, potentially tastier, less, you know, it's less bony, I suppose. That's okay. But where you run into issues is where these heavily grain-fed chickens blow up in such huge sizes because of the energy, a surplus in the energy that they're receiving from grain, that they're no longer able to support their own bodies. Like their feet can't support their own bodies, and they start getting ulcers underneath the feet, which become infected because they're in crowded environments because they can't support their own weight. And as a result of that, they require antibiotics, which obviously decimates their microbiome. So they're not very well animals. Whereas the chickens that are sort of free range, like I've got chickens at our place, they just roam in the grass and we give them a little bit of grain. But vast majority of their food should be forage, should be worms, should be insects. They're a highly carnivorous animal, actually, chickens. And you can generally tell the yolk quality by just the intensity, the color of the chicken's egg. You can tell whether it's been grain fed. It was interesting, Ken, when I was in America a few months ago, just visiting some friends and family in San Diego, I noticed that the hotels which were all relatively decent hotels, the egg color was super pale. And I realized like this grain feeding must be super prevalent. And I think I'm not knocking America, but I think that culture of heavy grain feeding is very prevalent in America, which is problematic. I think in Australia, you find that farming still done in a very old school fate. Don't get me wrong, there's still a lot of grain feeding done here, but the animals are a lot more free range here. And there was definitely a difference in the quality of the eggs that I noted up there. So you're getting this protein source, that's fine, but you're going to find that the nutrient profile within it is reduced. So over time, you just run into these kind of deficiencies, I suppose, in nutrients, which then in a human being activates this cycle of perpetual hunger, And that in that within that perpetual hunger, you're in this environment, this gentrified environment, full of these corporate food giants that you know try to hook you to this hedonistic way of eating. And this is the issue that people run into. It's a nutrient deprived environment in which we exist, sadly.
And even see, right, I know you mentioned omega 6. You know, a lot of omega 6 dominant stuff in some instead of omega 3s. And I believe there's even some ingredients in omega 6 that'll help us, you know, eat a little bit more and have that ability to keep eating, as well as mess with our insulin profiles a little bit too, right? So
yeah, absolutely.
Omega 6 is under control.
Absolutely. Omega 6 is it is an essential fat. We need it, but I think we're just getting a overwhelming excess of it in relation to the omega 3. And you can measure it objectively in human beings. Like when human beings evolved, eating a wild diet, our omega profile was 1-to-1. Now we have people with ratios, you know, ridiculous ratios, 1-to-20 or 30 or 1-to-90 even, where the omega profile, omega 3 profile, is vastly overpowered by the omega 6 content, which just tips you in favor of a pro-inflammatory state. I'm simplifying it, of course, here, but yeah. But fundamentally, there's just an overwhelming excess of a pro-inflammatory environment in this modern day world.
And for you, like just coming from the background that you have, do you see any differences with people that are, you know, eating more farmed meat? Are there things that you're seeing or trends that you're seeing going, wow, I'm noticing this in the gut more with people? Do you see that pro-inflammatory results more, or is it hard to measure that way?
It's look, if we were to again simplify it, if you look at the American population, for instance, and America is a good example because of the rates of chronic illness there, obviously very, very high. I mean, there's a statistic suggesting that 90% of America's adults are American adults are metabolically unwell, right? Metabolically unwell, only 10% are metabolically healthy. So if we were to take America as an example, as a population, the amount of protein consumed by Americans is about 10%, right? Whether that's plant or animal protein. So it's just an extremely low level. So my point would be this: we can go into nuance with regards to wild meats and meats in general, but the overwhelming fact is just people are just not consuming enough of it. They're just not consuming enough protein. When you start looking at wild meats versus farm meats, I think you're starting to go into nuance. And that's, I mean, if you really want to kind of, if you really want to optimize health, yeah, absolutely. You know, consuming wild meats is much better than consuming farmed or heavily feedlot fed animals. But the reality is there is just not enough consumption of protein, full stop, right? And if you think about it, like if protein is at 10%, your fat and carbohydrate intake has to be at 90% for both those macronutrients. And over time, a protein deficiency has to erode your musculoskeletal system. So you're just losing muscle with these low protein type of diets. You're becoming more fragile, more frail. But muscle is two things. You know, it is your ability to move. So someone whose muscle amount is diminishing just has a reduced, reduced ability and drive to want to move. Not only that, it is also metabolically active tissue, so you're losing
right, so insulin sensitivity could change as well, right?
Is it 100%? 100%. Your insulin sensitivity is dictated by your musculoskeletal tissue, so you're diminishing muscle metabolic rate in an environment where you're eating 90% of it's coming from energy in fat or carbohydrate, and so over time people just end up with something we call sarcopenic obesity, which is very prevalent in America, which is where you might see someone, they might look large or overweight, but if you were to do body composition scans, you'll see that these people are very diminished in muscle tissue, you know, similar to these animals that are fed a very heavy grain diet. Their muscle tissue diminishes or becomes infiltrated with fat, and that's what, you know, heavily grain-fed animals are. They're fundamentally obese animals.
So even when you look, if any, you know, coaches, students are listening, one of the things we always try to work on is working on insulin sensitivity, which is obviously first having a good amount of quality protein, you know, in a client's life to help regulate insulin, to help with the immune system. We always say like, immunity, detoxification, skeletal muscle, all important parts of having quality protein. And one of the best ways to keep insulin under control is obviously having protein, and then obviously forward going, having muscle. So that's a great point for anyone listening, is as we've hammered it back many times, is most people are told in the media they don't eat so much protein, but most people that come into our businesses are under eating drastically. Like maybe by dinner time they're having meat. So they missed the first 30 grams for detoxification, they missed the second 30 grams, you know, for immune system and everything else. And then they're on the back end going down towards the evening already, right? So most people don't think about protein is good for immunity. They don't even think about
Absolutely. You know, protein is critical. And a lot of our protein actually comes from the turnover of our own gut cells. Like we shed our gut tissue into our, within our digestive tract. And then the body finds protein so valuable that it has to, it recycles the fundamentally the meat that you're sloughing off into your gut. I mean, when people talk about we're not a carnivorous animal or we're not an omnivorous animal, we're a plant-based animal that is designed for plant-based eating, I find that incorrect from the perspective of a gastroenterologist, because most of your protein is actually coming from the turnover of your own cells that you're shedding into your gut. So the body finds protein so valuable that it actually recycles your own. And over time, if you run into this protein deficit, which most people do because of a lack of intake of quality protein, you have to become catabolic and break down the tissues that you carry around to be able to feed that protein pool. And that tissue comes from bone and muscle. This is why we've got this epidemic of fragility and frailty in hunter-gatherer groups that are still living the way we're supposed to live, that are active, that consuming quality protein, quality food, quality nutrients, basically, you'll find that they still are able to retain muscle tissue well into their elderly age. Whereas in the West, we've got this epidemic of muscle loss, which fundamentally tackles our ability to be non-sedentary. And over time, that sedentary behavior is just lead to a whole host of illnesses. It just becomes this vicious cycle, Ken.
So let's, I guess, to kind of recap and go through things. So wild meat's great for a lot of things. Obviously, nutrient density, better. You know, it's a leaner meat, you said. That's as well. Fat profile is better.
Yep. Okay. Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And just to hammer in this point, if you can find a local rancher who's grass feeding and finishing his animal, minimizing the amount of grain if they're finishing them that way, or a farmer who's using regenerative practices to rotate his cows through. A lot of those farmers tend not to give any grain at all. You'll find that you're fundamentally replicating a wild meat. A grass-fed finished cow is not all that different to a wild animal fundamentally, because it's consuming a diet that those sort of animals used to consume anyway.
And, you know, we didn't even get to dive into, if the animal's healthy, feeling great, and we're eating it, what does that mean for us? If the animal's grain-based, we then are going to get some of that concern, I would say, right? If we're eating an animal that's grain-based, we have to keep an eye on how the animal is health-wise and then how that's affecting us. We didn't even talk about that, but that's a whole nother way of looking at it, correct? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's you'll find that animals that are heavily grain fed, again, not only do they develop issues with the gut problems that we spoke about, often they require antibiotics because the immune system's not getting the right type of inputs, I suppose, right? And they tend to be more crowded in together as opposed to rotating through or grazing through land. So you'll find that not only is the grain feeding decimating their microbiome because of the presence of pesticides like glyphosate residues within grain, but you'll find that they're getting this double hit of antibiotics as well, which further deteriorates their microbiome. So it's an animal that is not as healthy as something that's wild. You'll find these wild animals very rarely require antibiotics, or regeneratively farmed animals don't require antibiotics, largely speaking.
And I love that. Before we finish off, I love how you talked about, you know, the issues with the gut with animals. And then in essence, if we as humans are consuming large amounts of processed grains, we are running through similar gut challenges. We see gut challenges as many things, which affects neurotransmitters, which can affect, you name it, like, you know, overgrowth of the gut and all sorts of things. So we're seeing the same things with us humans, consuming processed grains in excess of our diet as well, right? So
absolutely, Ken. I think we're seeing an extinction level event occurring, not in us human beings, but within our gut. We're seeing extinction of our microbiome. Now we're decimating these species so much so that the entire species of bacteria disappearing within our gut, and we cannot separate the health of our gut microbiome from the health of us. These things are irreversibly interlocked and interwoven, and it's a kind of a symbiotic relationship. The reduction in the health of our microbiome has to match that which is of us. And the guy who read the Hippocratic Oath said that all diseases begin in the gut, and it was fundamentally correct.
Wow. Well, I feel like I could we could sit and chat and listen to this for another hour, but I know you have a jam-packed schedule today, obviously, with patients coming in. So I really loved hearing, even this time, all the things you had to say. If there are people, students, whatever, listeners that want to follow you, find you, where can they find you on Instagram? Let's just, so they know where to, I'll put in the show notes, but where can they find you?
Yeah, thank you, mate. I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm pretty active on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, generally the same content across three of those social media platforms. It'll be under the handle Dr. Pran Yoga Nathan. So I just tend to put out blogs related to farming, philosophy, diet, nutrition, movement, all of this sort of things. And I comment a lot. I try not to do it too much, but I comment a lot on the connection between the agricultural, medical, pharmaceutical, industrial complex and how the broken food systems required to keep this medical industrial complex running, pharmaceutical industrial complex running. Commenting overly on that can drive followers or people that are following me to be overly cynical because it's such negative content. So I try and minimize that, but it's important people understand what's going on, because you can't start a health journey without healing trauma, number one. And number two, you can't start a health journey without knowing the challenges that you face. And this industrial complex is a massive challenge, massive hurdle that people face. And I think it's important to speak the truth around it, you know?
I agree a lot. Not to get too far on that, but I agree. I was talking with a colleague of mine who's sitting in the room here, and we were talking about a coach that was upset because some of our content, she said, was fear-mongering. I said, no, we are giving people the power of education and choice to choose what they want to do, and that knowledge is so important. Hiding it away to have a happy conversation isn't always great, and they have the ability to decide what they want to do with this valuable information. So I agree. I love your page in terms of how it brings truth to it, and people can decide what they want to do with that and empower them to make choices in their life that they wouldn't know without this information. So I think that's fabulous, though.
Absolutely. In a world where everyone's kind of trapped in a costume party with masks on, what you want to do is turn up to that costume party with your real face without a mask, you know. And and I think these sort of people sometimes face challenges because you're standing outside the herd, but it's spiritually great for your system, and I think overall it leads to better health behaviors. When you talk about 90% of America's population being metabolically unwell, you're talking about the majority of the herd are diseased. And so when you stand apart from the herd, the majority look at you and kind of turn on you. But I still think for people to kind of really optimize their health, we've got to stand away from the herd. That's critical to do so.
Well, you know what? I appreciate you. I appreciate you being on the show today. And I'm going to try to drag you back on and have another conversation on a gajillion things that we could talk about. So again, thank you for that. Thank you for being here today, brother. So
absolutely, Ken. It'd be a pleasure to have you to come back on your show. It's been great talking to you, mate.
Anyone listening out there, students, they said our next transformation mentorship cohort, that's coming up real fast. So if you are looking to find better ways to heal the gut, work on insulin, work on sleep, and provide better tools to deal with different clients coming in the door, or to have more confidence in your business, check out our www.transformationmentorship.ca website to apply. until next time, Fran, it was great talking to you, brother, and we'll talk soon. So
thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Have a good day, man.
You too. Take care.
Take care.
All right. I'm really appreciative of you joining me on this episode today. If you're looking to connect more, you can go to Transformation Mentorship on Instagram. And if you love something about the episode, leave a comment and a rating. I would really appreciate that. Otherwise, until next time.